and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts.
Sarah Owen Hughes.
And me, Faith Douglas.
Sarah Owen Hughes. I'm a professional horticulturist, or plant botherer, as my friends say. Nice to see you, John. And we're here to interview and talk to some of the most interesting people from the breadth and depths of our industry. So we're going to have a fantastic rolling program throughout the weekend of just really fascinating people behind the plants. I'm going to introduce my cohort, my colleague, Faith Douglas, who is a curator at an arboretum. And together we've pulled in all our contacts, all our friends, to try and get a space for you to come and sit down, have a little rest, because we all need a rest at the flower show, and to hopefully learn something new that might inspire and excite you. And our next guest, our second guest of the day, is a fruit queen. She knows everything there is to know about fruit growing. Hilary is a member of the Northern Fruit Group, which is part of the flower show, isn't it? It's always here. The Northern Fruit Group always has a presence, and she is a passionate advocate for fruit growing, whether that's in an urban situation, on the top of Baildon Moor, or even on a tiny balcony or patio. So we're going to talk to Hilary about some of the more unusual ways to increase your five a day. So a warm welcome, please, everyone, for Hilary Gardner from the Northern Fruit Group, our fruit gardener.
Thank you.
So, hi, Hilary. It's lovely Hello. To see you again at these flower shows. So, would you mind telling us just a little bit more about your role in horticulture, please?
Well, I started because the family have always grown all their own fruit and veg. So I was one of those kids that used to crawl around the fruit and veg garden, eating soil, you know, carrots as they really come, with plenty of crunch. And since I grew up, I've always been growing my own fruit and veg. So, it's sort of just something I do.
Brilliant. So you work with the Northern Fruit Group. Could you tell us a little bit more about them, please?
Well, the Northern Fruit Group was started essentially a few years ago now to actually look after the fruit garden at Harlow Carr. This was before the RHS came along. And then after a while, the RHS decided they were taking all the societies away, and so we had to find somewhere else. And we now have two teaching gardens. One's over at Huddersfield on a south-facing, and I'll tell you in a minute why I say south-facing, dark soil site. Lovely and warm. And then we are also renting some land at Otley, which is flat and in the valley there. So there we grow a large number of different varieties of apple, pears, plums, and of course this is where I'll put in a plug for the group. We collect our apples, we juice them on Otley Chevin, bottle it, pasteurise it, and then flog it to you to keep the group going.
Fantastic. You know, anything for free food, you know me.
Yes, that's right.
So tell us a little bit more about that south-facing aspect.
Right, well, you see, my garden, I live on the north-facing side of Otley Chevin. So basically, if you look at Otley Chevin, it's trees and heather. So one thing that I can grow very nicely, of course, is I can grow my blueberries in the ground.
Oh, wow.
Now, most people need to have a pot with nice free drain and ericaceous compost in order to grow their blueberries. I just bung them in the ground. The only thing is, I do have to net them because the birds have discovered them. When I first grew blueberries, I had no problem. And then one cheeky blackbird found them. Since when, I have to net them.
So why is fruit tree growing so important?
Well, for a start, we're all being told to plant trees.
We are.
So why not have something that gives you a fantastic blossom? What's better than the lovely pink apple blossom at this time of year? And then, of course, you've got fruit, and we've got early apples, mid-season apples, late-season apples, and in fact, I am still eating my own apples. My Fiesta is beginning to lose its flavour, but it'll keep me going. My Bramleys are still going, my Golden Wonder, so two lots of cooking apples still going. So it's still, what's for pudding, Mum? Stewed apple and custard, or apple crumble and custard.
So, how do you store your apples? Because it's one thing having a huge harvest of apples, isn't it? But what do you do with them? How do you keep them fresh?
If you go around the back of the market, you'll find those blue plastic trays that the mushrooms come in.
Yeah.
And they stack from floor to ceiling. And my laundry room is actually a stone built with a concrete floor. And it's distinctly cold. So any area that keeps below 10 degrees centigrade, so you store them, just lay them out so they're not touching, store them from floor to ceiling. The downside is you do need to go through your trays every week, and then, of course, you toddle up to the compost heap with a good bucket full of apples that are no longer fit for use. And, of course, one of these fine days, I'll peel a complete apple rather than one with a bit that's going brown. So then, of course, it's after that. Through May, June, I have to use plums from the freezer. But then, of course, I'm onto the soft fruit. So we're into blackcurrant for a crumble instead. And blackcurrant's great if you mix it into a sponge mixture. Raspberries, of course, are fabulous for anything and everything.
Yeah.
So you might even get fruit and custard or fruit and cream.
Have you come across jostaberries? We have jostaberries in our
yes,
garden.
Now, jostaberries, the bush is 10 foot tall, 10 foot wide, 10 foot high, and the blackbirds love them. So actually, the way I grow jostaberries is actually grow them as a very tight cordon.
Yeah.
Because if you grow cordon, which is just a single stem with little side branches, there's nowhere for the birds to sit and thoroughly enjoy their time. So the ones that are on the allotment at Huddersfield are cordons, and the ones in Otley are on fairly tight, so I can actually get a net over them, and then I get the berries, and the blackbirds can have them when I've finished.
Am I right in thinking that jostaberry is a hybrid berry?
Jostaberry is one of the few interspecies hybrid.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid between blackcurrant and gooseberry.
Yeah.
So it's quite good fun giving them to people to taste, because some people crunch and say, "Oh, it tastes like a gooseberry." You give it to the next person and say, "Yeah. Oh, no, it tastes like a blackcurrant." But when you swallow them, you tend to get the opposite flavour. It's quite fascinating.
I don't think you have that sourness, that little that bitterness that you can have sometimes with a gooseberry with them, I think.
No, you don't get that. Mm. It's the one that you get with the sweet gooseberries. But, of course, my other game is at Great Yorkshire, giving people gooseberries to taste, especially the children, because you'll see the parents there going like, you know, screwing up their faces because they think it's sour. And so I give them the kid, "Ooh, it's lovely." I usually bring the yellow sweet one, Gunner, and then there's the red one, Dan's Mistake, which is a bit later usually, but we usually, those are the two we usually feed to people to watch their faces.
There was a guy on our allotments years ago. We had 10 gooseberry bushes on our plot when we moved in, which is quite a lot of gooseberries for anyone.
It is, yes.
And I tried to offer one of the bushes to the guy next to me, and he said, "Green bullets of death, I don't think so." And he wasn't going for it, because there is a perception that they're very bitter. But actually, that flavour profile is something that we're used to. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but I used to dip rhubarb raw into sugar.
Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah.
It shows how old I am, but that's what we used to do. And it is part of that exploration of flavours that allows us to access the nutrients. And eating fruit, particularly homegrown fruit, gives you all of the sours as well as the sweets.
Well, actually, our diet was supposed to be very bitter, and we don't tend to have a bitter diet anymore. It's very sweet because of all the artificial sugars. But one thing that's always puzzled me about gooseberries, they're called gooseberries because geese like them,
no.
I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
But my geese do not eat my gooseberries.
No, it was gooseberries because they were served as a sauce with goose because they're so sharp. they cut through the fattiness. Yeah. And in fact, in France, they call them mackerel berries because they serve it with mackerel.
So no wonder my geese don't like them.
That's why your geese don't like them, yeah.
Yeah. And picking up on the gooseberry theme, when you've finished using your gooseberries, there is an apple called gooseberry, as green and hard as green gooseberries. And that one will last right through. I haven't even looked at those yet. There are two that will be through right to June, and they are the French crab and the gooseberry. They'll still be there, so I ignore those. You don't need to worry about those till about May.
Now, Hilary, at the Autumn Flower Show, you created a complete stir last year. I don't know if anyone was here, but people were showing a huge amount of interest because you created the smallest fruit garden I think I've ever seen in my life. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how people, even with a balcony or a small front garden, can still grow productively. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, I mean, they had a category called square yard garden. So I went for an area that was 2 square yards by 2 square yards. I created a garden. I had cordon apple trees down one side. So cordon trees are single and they grow best at an angle because you get the range between the ability to grow and the fruiting. So they fruit quite nicely. So I had a quince in the corner. I had some Saskatoon berries, which are one of these, what I call horribly bitter black fruits, the ones that are supposed to be so good for us.
Okay, yeah.
Then down the other side, I probably had some cordon currant fruits, and then I had the inevitable strawberry pots, I'm sure. But these were all in pots. They live in pots. They grow in pots. And so the largest pot I ever have is the 10 litre, which is about that sort of size. So there is absolutely no excuse. And, of course, with the apple trees, at the garden centres, they will flog at you at great expense, these so-called patio trees. It's a dwarfing rootstock. It grows to about 6 foot high and then stops. So you can actually, I usually, if people are talking to me about growing them in an ordinary garden, that's the rootstock. I say, right, I'll show you how to graft it, take it away. In a year's time, it'll be growing. I've got some one-year-old trees fruiting merrily on the stand, which is over in the far... second plug in.
Where are you?
Yes. Okay, right, fine. I'm over in the far corner in the plant societies, which is literally a diagonally across here. This year, I decided it was time we went with the climate change idea. So plenty of trees, but also the importance of the thing called winter chill. The black currants, it's very important. Down in Kent, their crops are really decreasing quite badly. There is one black currant that is low winter chill. I investigated that many years ago because I thought, can I accept the challenge of producing black currants in fruit for Chelsea? I decided that the number of cold rooms I'd need for it was too little. So winter chill, and then of course the strawberries, which are basically, they need root chill, but they're basically day neutral, some of them, the so-called everbearers. So you don't actually need, other than ordinary lighting, you don't need the increase in lighting for that. So that's a much easier game to play. I haven't started trying that yet. You never know. When I'm short of something to do, having spent the winter either teaching people to graft or showing them how to prune their big trees or renovate their old tatty trees, I might try that during the summer when I've got nothing better to do.
And I want to know what your favourite fruit is, if you could only grow one thing.
Oh, heavens, what would I do?
And it's like choosing a favourite child, isn't it? It's
yes, exactly. Well, I mean, my answer to what's my favourite apple is usually the one that's ripe at the minute.
Right, yes, I agree.
So I think it would have to be Fiesta because that has the longest season.
Yep, perfect. Well done. And what fruit should we be trying? Because there's an awful lot of fashionable fruit around, but what fruit should we be trying to grow up here in the north with our variable climate where it was wet here last year, it was sodden, and it's beautifully and sunny here today.
Well, of course, the thing that I have actually brought in that I was going to try to persuade people to grow, grows like a weed, is the physalis.
Okay.
You grow it. In fact, I've got some physalis, so you come and get one off me. You take it away. You collect. You take. Scrape a few of the seeds out. Scrape them out on kitchen paper. Take them away and dry them. Then you eat the rest of the fruit. And then just later on, when you've dried them off properly, you plant them, preferably in a propagator. Grow them as you would a tomato. They grow like a weed, and you probably won't thank me, because if you grow tomatoes, put them in with the tomatoes, grow them like that, and they'll do a takeover bid.
Hilary, that was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much, everyone. This is Hilary Dodson from the Northern Fruit Group.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. That's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.